Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
They're going to teabag fight.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Man, it's been a hot minute since we've started with the intro there live. But feels good. Feels real good, man. I appreciate the demand from from my guests today, Josh, Chrissy, and Kyle. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey. Thanks, dude. Just want to say, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, yeah.
Fanboying hard, yeah.
Well, thanks for being on the show, and more importantly, thanks for demanding that I play the intro. I mean, you didn't really, but I was like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. Why not? Like, you know, I can flex my new soundboard, and you know, now I have one less thing to do in editing. So I appreciate that very much. All right, so you guys are all the way from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Right?
All right. So we're on Oahu and Honolulu. It's the area is called Kaka'ako. So there's 3 other breweries around, like within walking distance: Honolulu Beer Works, Aloha Brewing Co., and Waikiki Brewing Company as well.
Okay.
There's a couple other ones that are on their way to open up as well.
And the name of the brewery is Hanakoa.
Yeah, yep. You got it.
I'm a fucking native, bro. Let's go. I love Honolulu. I went there one time, and then there's that, they have that tiki bar, the La Mariana Sailing Club.
Have you ever been?
I have never been there.
Oh, my God. That place rules, dude. It's like everything is just lacquered. Like every single piece of thing in the entire universe, everything's held together with lacquer. But the drinks were good. And you know, so we were in Hawaii for like 6 days. And that was the best poke I'd ever had. We went to the La Mariana when we landed. 5 days later, that was still the best poke. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Hawaii story.
It's weird. When we were living in Concord, there was like a poke spot opened up right there in the square. And I was like, all excited, like, oh, sweet. And I was, you know, born and raised out there, go there. And there was like, yeah. And it was just like, no marinade, nothing. It was just like the raw ahi, no anything. And I was like,
this isn't
poke.
The poke spot. Yeah. And like Bev and I would just munch on it because it was like, it felt healthier than anything else. But there was almost like a sanitizer.
Yeah.
Flavor. I mean, the aroma when you walk in, it was like, ah, man, this is bleaching something. But I felt like it came through in the fish, and I was like, I just feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
My stomach doesn't feel like this should be how it tastes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. good poke when you came out. Sometimes it can be hit or miss depending on where you go, like when you visit and you're like trying to figure out the spots.
I went to this place. It was, I think it was in Honolulu proper. It was on one of the eating shows, you know, the food shows. Maybe it was like an Anthony Bourdain one. I forget. Anyway, I don't know where it was called or where it was or what it was called, but I think it gave me food poisoning the next day.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, not good. So we were always in Waikiki for one day, and I wanted to go to, like, the five, you know, weird tiki bars there. And I was in the hotel room just not doing it. But anyway, that's a story for another time. So, Chrissy, you used to work at the Hop Grenade.
I did. I was part of the opening crew, like, 2 weeks in. Honestly.
Yeah. How does it feel being back? Do you miss it, or are you glad to be moving on to bigger and much better things?
Well, I mean, it's weird because that place is always like home. Like I used to play poker with those guys, and like I used to house and dog sit for Moscow, and like it's Beer's family. So it's weird being on this side of things.
I'm so used to,
like being like, oh, those are the Brewers. I wonder if I'll get to meet them. And it's like, oh.
Now you know it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I'm not that cool though.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the same experience, but when I went to pick up your beers, because you guys left them at the bar, that was the first time I had been back since March of last year.
Oh.
And it was really weird to be back. And it's like, because I walk in and the gal who greets me, I don't know her. She's brand new. The other dude, I forget his even name, but everybody, you know, we're all wearing masks. So from the bridge of the nose up, you're trying to like place who this person is so I don't get kicked out because they weren't open yet. You know what I mean? So it's very much like, hi, my hands are up.
Where's Kevin? And then I saw Papa Lou and I was like, Lewis, like someone I recognize. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that's good, man. It's weird being around places you used to go with people that you are supposed to know, but you can't really recognize now because of the mask. So it's weird. But anyway, thanks a lot for the beers. And I have them. They're in this really cool cooler.
Yeah. Is that what you sent them?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So we don't have a lot of stores on the mainland or that the mainland has, and we have to like ship in stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And I am like a hoarder of school supplies and like planner shit, and so I went to a Michael's and there was like a $6 cooler. It was like perfect. Like,
dude, I saw that come out and I was like, securing the Bagarino for sure, because number one, it's pineapples and I love that shit. And it's, you know, and so I just looked in it. I didn't even look in it before the show. I just looked in it. Every beer is different.
Yeah.
I assumed that you had sent doubles or maybe even triples of, you know, a thing. But there's like 12 beers in here and not one of them is the same. How are you brewing so many different beers to put in? Like, it just seems like a logistical nightmare. What's going on over there? What are you guys doing? Yeah. What is wrong with you?
So basically what happened was like during COVID, there were two shutdowns in Hawaii. And when we reopened after the second one, we switched our business model to, we need to have a beer release every single week. It needs to be a new beer.
One to two
every
week.
And it just kept going that way. So it was like, I write the descriptions, and basically we've been working with an artist who has done a lot of great work, and we have another person we're working with as well right now, and it's kind of just become our business model. I think we have two beers, a pale ale and a blonde, that are those are our only staples. And I'm sorry I couldn't bring any cans of pale ale. We totally it ran out. We had a hard time.
Yeah, it sold out before we could snag it.
I mean, I love a pale ale, but I love lagers even more. So you're treating me right today. It's all right.
No, I really wanted to kind of get your opinion too. Like, I've heard a lot of the other guys that have come on here, like most recently, like the Ronin thing, like he was doing, and just Peter Allen and all those guys. And so we're just kind of hoping we can develop our lager program to kind of get to that next level as well. Like, we've got 3 30-barrel fermenters on the way and 2 30-barrel horizontal brights. And, you know, it's kind of, the lager thing's been like a passion project thing. And then we've done the other stuff because it's like, yeah, that'll pay the bills. And it's also fun to do.
Yeah. You know, there is a certain part of me that needs to just sort of be okay with the fact that it's fun to brew like hazy beers. That's what you're referring to, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? And honestly, no one's ever really brought that point up about the pure just enjoyment of it. It's either like, oh, I like to drink them, so we're going to make them, or I want to learn about it, or that's what we have to do. But it's never just like, that's actually really fun to do.
Well, and honestly, like, even when we do these, like, so there was going to be a can that you got, but it would have been the biggest roulette, and it would have either made it where we you love the podcast, or you would have ended it right here.
Well, okay. Josh is like, give him a silver bullet. And I was like, no, because we don't know what that's going to be. And he's like, that's the beauty of
I
it.
I would have done like, it. Hey, I'll play beer hunter with you guys all day long. That's fine. I'll do it. Well, I would have done it.
So, you know, obviously doing new beers all the time, sometimes you get ahead of it and we're waiting on labels. So there were two beers. One was our Fest beer, which we, you know, I've been lagering for 3 months. And then the other was a blue Imperial milk stout with 75 pounds of Oreos and 30 pounds of cookie dough. So it was really
like that. Yeah, no, Stummy couldn't handle it. There's no way. I'm 43 years old.
In a can is what you're saying, right?
Or a really traditional Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
One or the other.
Yeah,
that, I have that all the time. Actually, you will notice if my screen weren't so blurry. Yeah,
there you
I
go.
I have a silver bullet myself right now, but I've got a Pilsner. So,
and
yay.
For those of you at home, we're not talking about Coors Light. We're talking the can blanks.
Right.
They're in the industry, they're called silver bullets because, well, they're long and they're silver. I mean, I shouldn't really have to explain that to you guys. You should know that. But yeah, so it's either really just could be anything in there. Well, I'm starting with this beer, and I think I want to talk about that first a little bit, and then we can transition into sort of the beer culture in Hawaii, because I'm very curious about what everyone's brewing out there and drinking. But I cracked the Party Boy Pils. Was that the first one I was supposed to do?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a Tokyo-style Pilsner, and I would really like to know, first of all...
So also, if you notice on the back, there's a little... explosion emoji for where you put your key.
Your key?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, so you can...
For shotgunning.
Shotgun it, yeah.
Oh, I was like, instantly Party Boy, because first of all, the label is basically a naked man with, basically it's Doc if he was taller and had more hair. And he has like a French cut, Italian cut bikini or whatever, and he's like partying. But you said key, I looked at the label, I'm like, why would you put cocaine on the label? Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. But that's where I'm at, I guess.
No, it's, so funny thing, so, me and Kyle, so Kyle didn't used to work at Hanakoa. Prior to, Kyle was with another brewery in Hawaii, and we had done a collab, and after that, we were just friends and hanging out, and there was one night where we're, like, playing, you know, drunk and cross-rated, playing, like, Venga Boys and, like, going nuts.
Well,
and
then, so...
Living your best life.
Start. Yeah. As well, like, I try and round everybody in and be like, okay, so here's our six-month-out schedule. What do we have coming up? So that way I can go to marketing, get artwork. Like, you know, it's a lot of cans, as you said. And so that turns into inevitably like 5 or 6 beers deep. That's when the real creativity is happening.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm alone in this while they are way farther ahead than I am. And they just start playing like Euro trash pop and literally dancing on top of the furniture. Party Boy Pils. Party Boy Pills.
God damn.
And I'm just asking, like, well, what's the date? When are we? And they're like, Party Boy Pills.
Well, and we wanted to do it as a collab, and both parties were just like, no, you can only do one once per quarter. And then, you know, Kyle came onto the team, and as soon as he came on, I was like, so we can do Party Boy. Like, we can do this now. It's not a collab. And so the whole story is the guy on the can is it's Chris, how do you say his last name?
Chris Pontius.
Chris Pontius from Jackass when he does Party Boy in the first movie. And you notice like in the corner, it says the Rice Factory. So there's a shop that's across the street from us that processes brown rice, and they provide rice to like, you know, like really high end restaurants, like Ruth Chris, the Ritz Carlton, all this stuff. Wow. And we approached them about doing a rice pilsner, and they're like really excited about it. I was like, okay. And I brought this artwork over to the dude, and I was like, hey, are you is cool this with okay? this? Because I'm like, hey, you have really high end places. And as soon as he saw it, he's just like, Sugoi! Like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, sweet, okay, cool. So we've done this actually two
rice
times. And
down the party.
Yeah. So the rice is actually, it's from Hokkaido, which is in northern Japan. It's called Yume Pirika. So when you actually make the rice, it's a little stickier, a little sweeter, a lot more of a very strong profile. So
okay.
We use that primarily to try to get a little bit more sweetness and a little bit more rice character and smoothness in the beer.
We actually do mill it too.
Yeah, and it actually gets milled too. So we're
really,
yeah, we're on a 15 barrel mash filter system.
Okay.
So it kind of allows us a little bit of wiggle room on some things that be more difficult. And so with this one, it's like 10% of the grist is this rice. And then it's all Hallertau Middelfru. Just an addition at First Wort, an addition at Whirlpool, small, and it's actually unfiltered. We actually found on the first batch when we were doing it that it just, there was so much character there. We didn't want to biofine it so that it would, you know, lose a lot of that lemon character, that softness, sweetness. And I actually found like once it does clear out, it is a little bit more like crisp and light, but I do kind of like just the Keller aspect of it.
And so that's coming from the rice.
Yeah, I think the rice contributes a fair amount of haze. We really, honestly, we're having trouble keeping up with a lot. So we haven't had a lot of time to dedicate to figure out just the percentage of what's actual proteins versus what's yeast that's staying in suspension. Our house lager yeast is the Andex strain. We get it from BSI. And, you know, in some beers, it will flock out fairly well. In others, it definitely takes a little bit of motivation and TLC.
Yeah. So what am I tasting with the flavors that the rice is bringing in? I mean, I know essentially what a little bit of rice can do to a beer, but it sounds like you were saying, it's high-end rice. There is a flavor impact. What should I be picking out that you can attribute to the rice?
It's actually more of like a mellow sweetness and mouthfeel that you get from that rice, which I think is contributed primarily just from what's staying in suspension. Because once it really, like, we've had some cans that we've left. This is the second batch that we've done. But when it's gone super clear, you don't get the same silky mouthfeel, I guess, so to say.
Yeah, it is. I don't want to say creamy because to me that's not, I don't know, lagers and creamy don't mix because they should be sharp. And this does have a sort of a sharper bitterness, but there is that. And I think you're right. I mean, obviously you're right to your fucking beer. What am I, stupid? But the cloudiness like does sort of coat the mouth a little bit, and it does make it a little bit, you know, let's call it creamier, but that's not really what I mean, I guess. And then the bitterness does sort of come through at the end, and it all works really, really well together. I really like it. It is sweet, and like you said, you have the lemony aspect coming through, which I imagine is from the hops. What hops did you use with this?
It's all Hallertau Middelfru, and we're looking on the second batch because we were waiting on the boxes to incorporate a smaller amount of Motueka and just kind of accentuate just kind of the some of the sharper tones to brighten it up a little more.
That's all Middelfru?
Yeah.
How is it that, what's that lemony brightness?
The Andex yeast, what I notice is there's a really distinct lemon twang that you get from the fermentation character. So like, you know, we've gotten anywhere from like, you know, like lemon meringue to like, you know, what you get out of like a custard filling or just that like lemon balm kind of thing too. Like the middle fruit that we have is a little older. I think what's in this batch is probably, I think it's either 2019 or 2020 crop year. I mean, COVID was interesting. We're trying to get all that, but so,
yeah,
you know, obviously if it was a little fresher, I think you'd probably get a little bit more of that noble characteristic, a little bit more like that forcey stuff. But the yeast is very expressive in this.
That's wild to me, because I would have bet that came from hops.
Thanks, man.
You know, I guess it's a comp. I mean, I don't know. It depends on what you're going for. I love it. And I do like figuring this stuff out, right? These are some of my favorite moments on these shows, is when I think I know a thing or I think I know how a beer is put together just from doing it and talking to people, and then I'm actually wrong about it. I like knowing that. I like knowing that we can still get these really expressive esters or these expressive, you know, citrus notes out of yeast.
Well, I think
it's wild to me.
I think the rice allows the yeast to really be at the forefront, which typically isn't in pilsners. So I think it's just giving a good balance to the yeast and lets it shine.
It's great.
Rather than being all about everything else.
It's a good lager.
Now, did you guys try a bunch of lager yeast before you settled on this one as your kind of house strain?
So I had worked previously with like, 3470 or German lager, and I had tried a few different ones doing R&D prior to opening the brewery. And the reason why I went with the Andex yeast, so I'd actually been to Andex, and it was the most romantic beer experience I had. And I just love, so, you know, you can either, when you get to this village that's 10 minutes outside of Munich, you can either take a bus to go up to the monastery, you can, you know, kind of hike through the woods. And so I, you know, hiked through the woods, everything like that, got up there, and, you know, it was the most amazing Doppelbock Dunkel I've ever had in my life. And when we started the lager program, we started with a Pilsner that was all Hallertau Mittelfrüh, unfined. Yeah. And my goal really with our lager program is I want to do it where it's all natural as far as like the beer clarifying. Like, I love clear Pilsner, but I want to see what we can do so that it's just, it has the time to sit. We want to eventually focus on doing natural carbonation, because I think there's definitely something to having that carbonation versus forced carbonation as far as mouthfeel there, which, you know, I haven't practiced or done, so it could turn out like total shit. But, I just think it's something where it's like the ones that I have had that have been naturally carbonated, I really enjoy. So a big aspect of our lager program is trying to do things as much where it's like, let the beer do what it needs to do. And when it's ready, that's when it's ready.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, that's a good beer. I really like it. How long are you lagering it for?
Do you recall this one? How long? It was
a little longer.
I think this is a total time from like into tank and out of like in a package about 8 weeks. Yeah, like 7 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
So we do a lot. We really like, I'll tie up a bright just for this right now, just because I'm like, no, it's not ready. We're going to have to unit tank that and all this and just try and.
Yeah. So we need more tanks.
Yeah. We need more tanks. Yeah, for sure. Well, and I mean, I really appreciate it because you taste a beer like this and instantly I would imagine all of that time stressing about tank turnover, and we could be running two batches of pale through this now, whatever. It's all worth it because that's what you have. That's your product is this beer. This is your face of your company when people drink it. And they want to know that you're actually doing a good job and you're trying and you care about the beer that you're producing. So you're not rushing it. You're waiting till it's done. You know what I mean?
It's interesting too, because like when Josh was talking about how he wanted to really go after lagers in Hawaii, I was a little like hesitant, because in Hawaii there is a good craft community, but nobody's really making lagers or going after it. And people that aren't as educated in craft beer and just grab something from the store, they typically get Heineken. Heineken's king out in Hawaii. So it was like, well, I mean, we could have a gateway to Heineken, which would be great for educational purposes, but we can do that with a blonde, no problem, and keep that in stock. Like, are you sure you want to go after lagers? Because all of the, you know, craft community, they're going after hazies, they're going after pastry stouts, like barrel aged stuff, you know, hype beasts and
smoothies.
We could do that, but I don't know. And at this point, lagers are our number one seller, which was really surprising for me.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, that's got to be kind of scary too, you know, to be like, well, let's do this thing that nobody else is really doing, and you got to take that chance. But it sounds like it's paying off, and I think it would be paying off because nobody else is doing it. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, people want to drink beers like this. They'll try the pastry stout, but at the end of the day, lagers.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, even, you know, our neighbors, like, have done a lot of different lagers as well. Like, everybody's really starting to kind of move to where if they can fit it in, they can fit it in and try to do it. It's just, it's hard because, you know, with COVID, in Hawaii especially, it was like, you know, nothing. So all of a sudden, like, an explosion of people with tourism and everything like that. So, you know, it kind of comes down to, like, you know, what can we actually do? What can we fit in? And So it's even on our end, like right now, I think we only have one lager. At one point, we only had 7 beers on tap. And I remember looking at myself just being like, this is utter shit.
Yeah,
what happened?
Like, we can't keep it in stock. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's the thing with beer is like everything is a month behind. So as soon as everybody comes and drinks all the beer, like you have a month to catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the same thing when lockdowns eased and everybody came back. We were down to like 6 beers on the board, and normally we have 24. So.
Oh.
Yeah, it was crazy, but you know, it's, you have so many punches right now. I got to just roll with it, right?
Yeah. Well, then that's a good point. You're instantly a month behind of demand.
Yeah.
So that's got to be kind of scary too, especially coming out of lockdown. Like, this is really exciting. However, we're fucked if we can't get this out. Like, nothing can go wrong with this brew day. So then what do you plan to start with? You know, something easily to turn around just to get something new on the board and get people in? Or like, I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions.
It varies on what's gone out of stock. We do a lot of charity and like beers that have a cause behind it. So if we have something that's dated for that cause, then that takes precedence. Like, but
yeah. And I mean, I think, don't hate me for this, but like we've definitely found that we can do a seltzer in like 11 days, but
yeah.
we actually at this point I've been like, you know what, I can't even make a seltzer because, you know, we don't have anything else. We've honestly just been trying to keep up with hazy and IPA and lager. I was really surprised, like it was more recently that we started kind of moving through more and more of that, but it's an interesting market. Like, there's no seasons in Hawaii, so you can make, like we did. Actually, Kyle actually organized, did you want to talk about that, the purvey thing?
No, you guys.
So Kyle, we'll the beer.
Yeah,
like,
we'll get to Kyle later, don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Over. Yeah, so it's always a weird market. You can make whatever you want at any given time, and it can be June, and you come out with a 12% pastry stout, and people are like, I'm totally into that. And you're like, all right.
It seems uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, well, does being in Hawaii, obviously it sounds like a very different market, but does it sort of like turn everything you guys learned in the States on its head as far as marketing to beer or what styles to push?
I think what's been great is that, you know, like I came from EJ Fair, and then I don't know if I had talked to you or mentioned this, but yeah, like I was the head brewer there before Kyle Manigold, and
oh, nice.
Then Kyle came from Meraz. And
yeah, all right.
Kind of had, you know, friends out here, and we've just learned so much from different people, and, you know, bringing that to Hawaii. And really, like, what we wanted to do with this opportunity was to kind of take what we learned and bring that out there and try to kind of say like, hey, like, this is where we can kind of take things. And it's been great coming into that community and everybody just being so inviting, and everybody, like, you know, going to your neighbor being like, hey, do you have a bag of sugar, kind of thing.
You're right.
Hey, do you have a bag of sugar?
Yeah.
So it's been cool to really just like kind of take certain things, learn certain things. And, you know, I think one thing that was very interesting about Hawaii, which I think you guys might appreciate, is that, you know, prior to us opening out there, you know, most of the breweries didn't even have a hazy. There was like one or two that really did. And then everybody really followed the, you know, everybody's got a light colored, either like a blonde or a cream. And then you have like a red, a brown, a pale, an IPA. So very diverse style aspect, which I actually don't want to see go away.
Yeah.
I think that's something that, you know, as brewers, everybody's really starting to see, where it's like, you know I have to make these beers because this is the demand, but what can I do to sway people to go back to something like hey, when was the last time you had an ESB? And like, you know, try to do that kind of stuff.
I would love that. Kidding me?
Yeah.
There's no way.
I got East Kent Goldings on contract.
Hell yeah. You know, I had a little tiny bit left of the Party Boy, and I just drank it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's warm and whatever. And I got like a green, like a Japanese green tea.
Oh, cool.
Flavor. Yeah, it was really neat. Like, I don't know. I like it. I'm a big tea guy, so I don't know. What am I going to do? Okay, let's see. Should we open another beer or take a break? Let's open another beer. We have.
Yeah.
What do you want to open, JP?
You have so many beers.
I don't know. I know, Teresa. This is the problem, because they're all, you know, just these cans, right? What are these, 16 ounces or whatever the fuck it is? Yeah.
I know.
So if we were in the studio, we would be sharing this can.
Yeah.
And then you can't get drunk. But now I've had one.
Tell me when we're going back to the studio, JP.
Oh, not this year. I'll tell you that much right now. There's no way.
Bevo. I was like, I want to go back to the grenade.
Honestly, dude, I do not blame you. It's,
oh, not at all.
It's very.
Oh yeah. Weird. I mean, things just got weird from the COVID standpoint. Like, I'm honestly starting to get a little uncomfortable because I live in Placer County where COVID, like, does not exist as far as a lot of people think. And yeah, it's like we're running a comedy show beginning of September and I'm like, we got to do this stuff outside. Like it's starting to make my skin crawl a little right now.
Yeah. So. It's disappointing. And you know, we're out here in East County and you know, our Contra Costa County in general is doing really well with vaxes, but East County, we're not. Our city is like half of what the overall like average of the county, and it sucks because we're trying to look for like preschool for Alice, and the lady's like, oh, like 50% of our teachers are vaccinated, and like, you know, I think 35 or 40% of adults out here in our city are vaccinated. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Everyone has to wear masks inside, but I just like I don't. It's too much, right? I just don't want to do it. And there's all these new studies and reports coming out about kids are actually getting it worse now than adults. And I'm not trying to do that with my 3-year-old. We're fine. We're sort of back to where we were last year. And it's funny because I was talking to Taryn, I think it was today. I was like, when did we get vaccinated? Because I swear to God it was last year. But it's not. It was in February. Like, it's not that long ago. But it's sort of like because we've been fighting and struggling and talking about mask efficiency and vaccines, and never mind all these people have had to be vaccinated to go to public school for the last X years they've been in the fucking world. But we're talking about this one specifically, and it's like we're just fighting over shit, and it's drawing out this first part of the year. But
yeah, no, it's weird because like growing up in the Bay Area, like you get used to the microclimates, like you get used to like, oh, it's going to be super windy, super foggy here. But then this is the first time we've seen like microclimates of like political views. It's like, and it changes that quickly based on the mileage that you're traveling. It's so weird to see like real time, especially with how far we've been traveling this trip. Like,
yeah, you guys are running like
to Oakland, to Concord, to, you know, all over.
Oakland to Sacramento to Lodi will flip your wig all over the place. Like that's...
Like being in flow, like people looked at us weird, like, oh, are you gonna wear a mask in the gas station? Are you infected? Versus coming up here, like people are walking down the street and giving you a weird look if you don't have one on.
Yeah.
It's just it's wild to see it change that quickly.
Well, in Hawaii is interesting too, because like for a while it was mandated that no matter what space you're in, you had to wear a mask outdoors or indoors.
Yeah.
And then it changed to where it was like, well, if you're vaccinated and you go indoors, you can participate. But if you're standing up or anything like that, you have to have your mask on. And then
Hawaii's just copying California.
Yeah, it kind of follows California. Oh, yeah. It's all over the map, dude. There's like people that are using like all kinds of weird aspects to politicize, like group everything in with like the vaccine. I'm just like, this is weird. Yeah.
It's
what did you open up? Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right.
Your podcast. Yeah.
It's well, no, it's fine, man.
We need beer
to and like
deal with all these topics.
Yeah, and you know, and honestly, normally we wouldn't be getting into this stuff, but it's the national conversation, and it impacts us all physically and mentally and emotionally. And, you know, it would be weird if we didn't talk about it. You know what I mean? So I'm all right with it. I just cracked open the slow chill pills.
Oh, you did get a slow chill.
Czech style Pilsarino. Shit.
So
I don't want to drip on my console, but let's see if I can catch the condensation before. There we go.
A little bit of background. It's not called slow chill because we do it as a slow pour. It's called slow chill because the lacing that stays behind. So the joke is, you know, and if you ever trip on shrooms, it's called trailing.
Yeah.
Everything's got like a frame for second change and everything. And yeah. This is really something that my parents are going to be very proud of.
Well, Mom, I read on the internet that people can eat mushrooms and it affects them differently. And so I thought that would be a really good name.
Thank you. Well, so anyway, this is basically a Czech style pill. So it's Weyermann Bohemian Pilsner Malt, which actually ended up being a sub because we couldn't get regular Pilsner Malt, which I was stoked. So that was great. And then just some acidulated in there for pH change. And then it's 1.5 pounds per barrel of Czech saws in the kettle and 1.5 pounds per barrel as a dry hop. This beer is 9 weeks. And we, yeah, well, just in general from fermentation to end. And we actually, so this was kind of like that whole passion project I was talking about, I think a little earlier. We got Lucre Seipel faucets. I got mugs specifically for this. I even trained the bartenders and did a PowerPoint presentation. And Chrissy came up with an acronym called WAF, or wet ass foam.
Okay.
So there's a video if you want to look at it. I will not incriminate myself on this podcast, but there's a dance, a rap.
That is basically what he's saying.
But yeah, if Chrissy's eye roll could be translated into an audio waveform, it would be pierce everybody's ears.
Yeah. But so what we wanted to do is, you know, there's a lot of different styles of pouring in the Czech Republic. What we went with was Pladinka. So it's known as the smooth pour. If you see like the Pilsner or Kel video. So the glass basically goes right up to the nozzle of the faucet. You pull the lever on the faucet, like maybe to like the 8 o'clock position, depending.
Okay.
Just a little bit. And what you do is you basically create like a wet foam that goes, you pull it all the way and you're basically pouring beer on top of this foam, which their hypothesis is that it works as an oxygen barrier. And, you know, I don't know what the merit is there. I haven't seen any data on it, but I've definitely found like in practicing with it for like 6 weeks prior to like implementing it, it was something that, you know, the process of filling it as well as just inside the nozzle to where the beer is going to hit the glass, there's actually a diffuser or like a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that turbulence really causes a lot of aromatics to come out of suspension and change just what you're perceiving. So this is actually going to be significantly crispier, snappy, very like bright green, more bitter. So you get kind of like more of, you know, it doesn't sound pleasant, but like green onion versus evergreen. The lemon doesn't come off as soft and sweet. It comes off a little bit more bright, like zesty. So I've definitely really enjoyed using that style of faucet. And they're actually coming out with ones that are not a side pull lever, but they're going to be, oh, cool. Yeah, so that's unfiltered as well. There's no findings in that.
Wow. You can see my stupid face in the thing. Look at
that. Oh, yeah, you can.
Yeah, 100%.
That's wild, dude. Yeah, this is, it's like a, it is a like a concentrated beer almost, you know, when you're describing it in that way, because it sounds like when it hits the diffuser and the special way you're pouring it, like you said, it's releasing the aromatics and it is sort of amplifying the aromas, but those got to come from somewhere. And so did you plan the beer around that pouring method?
Well, what does that make sense? As far as, so we carbonated this beer actually up to 3.1 volumes.
Wow.
So
that's more than Coors Light.
Yeah.
That's wild to me.
The whole point being, because, you know, normally what they'll do in the Czech Republic is it's like a glass blend of nitrogen and CO2, but I didn't want to mess around and try to do all that. I wanted to see if we could just do it on CO2. And, you know, you think with how much CO2 is coming out of solution with this whole process that, you know, we still need some carbonic bite. Being on an island, it's hot. That's what people are looking for, is something that's going to like actually kind of like pop and be refreshing. So
yeah,
that's why we went higher. As far as everything else, like the design of it, we had actually done a beer that was very similar to it a year prior, but it was called Jazzflut. It was a play on like the line from Ron Burgundy or Anchorman, where he's like, "Well, Ron Burgundy play Jazz Flute." No.
I figured it was a tribute to the rock band Yaz. That's what I thought.
But. Is there a rock band called Yaz?
Yeah, Yaz.
Yes.
Yaz, man. Yeah, they're not good.
Oh,
yeah. Well, no, I mean, they're not good.
It's like a bad early 80s,
yep,
70s rock band.
Teresa knows.
Well, we could road trip to that.
Please do.
There you go.
Add it on.
Do a fact-finding mission.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, any recommendations on albums for the road would be very welcome.
I got a few. I was watching Lollapalooza. They broadcast it on Hulu, like when it was going last week or whatever. Yeah. There's a few cool bands out there. I didn't really... Dayglow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Look at that. I had no idea.
Well, they had that one popular song. Like, I think that was on the radio for a while. Oh,
yeah, I don't know. But they were interesting. It was weird. I don't know. Shit like that. I like this beer. It is good. I'm sort of swirling it around to maybe sort of mimic the aromatic release. And I don't know if I'm, if it's doing anything really well. I think sometimes it sort of has to go through that specific process of hitting the screen maybe and whatever. But yeah, well, I like this beer. It is more of a robust sort of Czech Pils for me. I like it. It's a little bit beefy.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Like we actually noticed with the Bohemian Pilsner malt, cause it was a sub. Normally we use Weyermann Pilsner on our blonde. So we had to sub that out. We found that it was definitely a little bit more like intense, just what was going on there. And then, you know, we got kicked this for our North Star Pilsner and had to figure that out. And that was very interesting. But
Kyle's breathing hard. What's going on? What happened there?
It was, you talk about it, Kyle.
That's you.
Well, so it was basically it's a lower modified Pilsner malt. So we normally step mash a lot of our beers. But this one, it was just kind of like, you can either get this or Gambrinus. And whenever I work with Gambrinus, it was stickier, like just that character. And I was I don't want that for a blonde. And so I was like, well, let's try this one. And, you know, sure enough too, it was like, yeah, like normally we get Pilsner malt in Hawaii at 83 cents a pound. And then this Pilsner malt coming in was 96 cents per pound with no other options. And I was like, all right, I guess we got to figure this out.
Yeah. But
thankfully, since we've been able to get Weyermann in, it's just, there's been, you know, container shortages, everything with COVID. And Hawaii's kind of on everybody's shit list. Cause it's like, well, you're in an island, so, but
you're going to suffer
to get Weyermann Pilsner too. So, you know, it's everywhere. It's really nuts.
Are you going to sell all your belongings and then just pack grain back for the trip home?
Right. I mean, if I did that, I'd probably only get two bags because of the 50-pound limit.
True. Okay. Yeah, you're right. All right. Yeah.
Well, even then, it's 55. Seven bags, and then we repacked everything down to just our carry-ons for our clothes. So literally, seven bags were straight beer.
Wow.
Trying to get it beneath the 50-pound limit. Like,
in hindsight, we should have just shipped stuff.
Yeah. The car was a whole other story.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The metal car, we got like a little screwed on that. It was like, oh, it's supposed to be a CX-5. Man. It was just Mitsubishi Outlander that was a little bit smaller. And we just like saw it, we're like already fuming after the wait. We're like, just get it in there. We need to get to Monterey. I want a beer.
Did it work? It sounded like it worked.
Oh, it worked.
Okay. Yes. All right.
It worked for us. Kyle was squashed in the backseat. Oh.
Kyle does not look like a short person.
No.
Yeah. No. So I can imagine that would be annoying.
Well, Kyle's actually the designated 30-barrel fermenter dry hop dude because my short ass can't really reach it with the scissor lift because there's like, it was a little poor planning in the spot. So we're going to actually bend the conduit up where the lights sit. Because otherwise, if you get there, you have like maybe like a foot of wiggle room to get up and then you got to kind of do all this stuff, but Kyle's just like, no, I can reach it. And I'm like, it's cool. And the one time I did it afterwards, everybody's like, you aren't doing that. And I was like, I know, we lost like half a pound of hops. I'm not doing that.
Awesome. All right, let me take a quick break, get some more beers, and we'll come back and we will keep chatting with Hanakoa, right? Yeah. I did it. Hell yeah. It's the session, everybody. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Tuned into the session
because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging on. It's the session. We are on with Hanakoa Brewing from Hawaii, or Hawaii. Is it Hawaii? Am I just sounding like an asshole when I say it?
Well, so honest. I mean, you can say Hawaii if you want, but yeah. The more local slang thing is to say Hawaii. And there's it looks like an apostrophe. It's between the I's. What it's known as is an okina. So it's almost like a six, but the open part of the circle is filled in.
Okay.
So it just seems like a staccato or a break.
Okay.
And then in Hawaiian language, the W can be pronounced as a V. So you would normally say like Hawaii if you were speaking proper, like, you know, native Hawaiian language kind of thing.
Yeah. What is considered respectful? Because, you know, what I don't want to do is go to Hawaii and seem like a tourist. You know what I mean? I don't want to get beaten up.
I think the easiest thing you could say is like Hawaii, because most people Hawaii. Say Hawaii.
Okay.
Not, I mean, if you say Hawaii, normally it's like, you know, you're
especially, you know, speaking Ololo and like doing all
that.
Weird.
Yeah, am I trying too hard at that point? I don't want to do that. I want to I want to seem okay, cool but respectful. That's my vibe.
The best advice I can give, it's a little less effort. So it's just like Hawaii versus like, you know, like it has to be like, oh, it's this, it's this. Like everything about Hawaiian language is very like, it's
chill,
ebb and flow, like just going with that. And it's very soft and like it blends. And it's a really cool language. Like once you get to learn it, I never took it given the opportunity. I took Japanese and I did terrible.
I heard that's like one of the hardest languages to learn. Japanese.
That makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, it's like it's very, very hard to learn. Like Chinese is very hard, but I've heard Japanese is very, very, very rough. I don't know. I've seen Moana a few times. I think I can get by. No, but it is a beautiful language. It has less consonants in it. I feel like the more consonants you have, the weirder your language sounds.
Yeah, like when you have German, it's not exactly romantic. That's
right. Yeah.
Yeah, it comes,
yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I just cracked the next beer in I was going to say in our glass, but that's not accurate. It's in my can, if you know what I mean. Pete's in Paradise Brown Lager. There's a little bit of a backstory here. Why don't you guys fill me in on that, huh?
That's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, so it's on the can too, whoever gets it. But basically there was a day where one of the front house managers comes into my office. He goes, "Hey, there's this older gentleman here named Pete here to see you." And I was like, "You gotta be fucking kidding me." So I get up and like I walk over to Kyle and he's finishing the end of a CIP and I go, "See, dude, this is why we don't get shit done." And then I go out and then immediately I was like, you know, Pete turns around. I'm like, "Oh my God, it's Pete." And I was like, "What are you doing here?" Like no context of coming out or anything. And
are you friends with him? Pete Sloshberg.
Yeah, I met him.
From Pete's Wicked Ales.
Beforehand, and like I met him like as a home brewer, and he was just like super nice. And I was like, "Oh, what's Pete's Wicked Ale?" And he's like, "Oh, well, it's this." And I'm like,
"I had never met him before then." And like, so that all happened before, and I'm drowning in like a ton of admin work and stuff. And I'm in my office that's upstairs where it's like, do not disturb. And Josh pops in like he normally does and comes up and give me 10 more things to do.
Yeah.
Like, tough. And he's like, "So there's somebody here from the Bay Area." And I was like, "That's cool. I'm in the middle of a lot of shit." And he was like, no, you got to come down." Like, he was friends with Tasty. And I was like, well, friend of Tasty's is a friend of mine. Like, damn. So I go down and it's Pete fucking Slosberg. And he was like, "Yeah, I saw you had, you know, a rendition of Janet's Brown. And we did another beer for Tasty." And so it really felt like, to me, it was like, damn, like Tasty was always somebody that introduced me to lifelong friends. And like, even afterwards, it's like, well, he's still fucking doing it from the other side.
Yeah. Well, if anybody's going to, it's going to be him, man.
Yeah.
Cheers to Tasty, huh?
It was.
Well, that's cool, man. And that's very much, I think, Pete's sort of style. You know, he's just sort of like cruising. You know, wherever the wind takes him, that he shows up, and he is like an incredibly nice guy. I mean, he's been on the show a few times. He's a great dude, like just salt of the earth.
Well, and the stories he had, like, I just wanted to listen to him for hours, like talking about how he was on the first like bottling line at Russian River, and you know, they would like flip up the cage and corks like up the other way so they knew it was the ones that they did, and like the stories that he told were like insane.
That's funny, man.
Willy Wonka of craft beer.
yeah, really cool dude.
Yeah, nice. So how was his visit? What'd you guys talk about?
Well, so like we all sat down and just started trading stories, and then, you know, I was like, "Well, how long are you out here for?" And he said 3 weeks, which pretty decent vacation. This was in March, and I was like, "Well, you want to do a collab?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he busted out this chart that he used to, I guess, like bring over when he was doing sales and stuff. And he's like, "You know, on the chart, there's brown lager, and there's never been like brown lager." So it's like, okay, so you want to do Pete's Wicked Ale as a brown lager. Then
it's almost like he had an agenda.
Oh, he did. And I was like, collab. He's like, this is what'd be fun. And so it's like, all right, cool. Yeah. Which I'm fucking down. I'm like, it's brown. Yeah, let's do it.
So, let's do it. Sounds like he's been pitching it. We're the first ones crazy enough to do it.
Not even.
No, not he's had to talk to people. Well,
we jumped on him to be like, yeah, you
I was
grow?
Like, you want to do something?
And, yeah, but yeah. I do think, I think the truth is in the middle somewhere, because I feel like Pete knew that this could happen. And I think when you're a guy like Pete, you're sort of already locked and loaded with an idea. You know what I mean? So I wonder if it's just like, let's try this.
Well, so the cool thing was, so this actually ended up being a collaboration with everybody in the area.
Anybody else like, wanted to do it?
I hit up, nice. Once I found out he was there, I started texting everybody else because he was like, oh, I'm going to walk around. I was like, hey, I don't know if you know, but Pete Sulzberg is in town. Like, and well, everybody. Like,
have you ever had a Pete's Wicked Ale? And people are like, fuck yeah, I have. It's like, the Pete is in town.
Like, so OGs are freaking out. Everybody's like, what the hell? And so, you know, when Pete was like, oh, I'm down to do this collab, I started asking everybody else. I was like, well, do you guys want to come down? We'll all do this collab together. Like, you know, oh, get all the breweries together. It was kind of like, you know, first time we could all get together and do it. And, you know, everybody took a keg to their brewery. So everybody had it on at one point.
Nice, dude.
We did these cans and, you know, had it on at our spot. And it was fun because when Pete came down for the brew day, we, you know, like took over. We have like an upstairs mezzanine area. So we had like a brewer's dinner kind of thing, and everybody hung out, and like it was the first time in a long time where it was like, this is kind of normal.
Yeah,
and it was really fun to like have that aspect of stuff.
We all got to shoot the shit with the other brewers, like, you know, we haven't done beer festivals in so long, so to be able to share a beer with like other people in the industry has been one, it's rare to begin with, but two, it was like especially rare after this past year, and it felt like it all coming together. And like, wow. For me, it was like faith in humanity restored, because I was having a really rough week. And then, you know, we started talking about Tasty and like, you know, talking about the community that craft beer is. And it really brought everything back home.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So just beer wise. So yeah, this is done on on the Index strain. It's the Pete's Wicked Ale recipe, fairly close. It's like two rows, C60, and I think a little bit of chocolate. And that's it. And then the hops are Hallertau Middle Fruit, Sapphire, and Laurel. And we actually dry hopped with a little bit of Sapphire and Laurel. And what I really loved about this beer was, you know, that like sensation you get. Did we do Holcomb Laurel?
Holcomb Laurel on this one.
Oh, yeah. So we did do.
Ran through the hop bag.
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle.
See? There you go. It's almost like Kyle was there.
So, and then we. But one thing I noticed, like the Laurel's been cool. We got a lot of strawberry out of it. So this one, like that sensation of when you bite into the strawberry kind of comes through, which is kind of nice. And like this is actually like a little bit older, but like when it was fresh, it smelled like chocolate covered strawberries. Like it was cool. And I was trying so hard to find Brewer's Gold. I called up everybody. I hit up More Beer and they're like, no dude, got that. And it was like, all right, but yeah. So then I probably should have hit up Hop Tech. I don't know if I mentioned this, but like I probably wouldn't be in brewing if it wasn't for Hop Tech. So shout out to
nice
over there.
Nice. Actually, Jade's in the chat saying hi. So
cool, sweet.
Awesome. We love Jade and Roberto.
Yeah same.
We did this, and honestly, I was pretty stoked for the fact that it was like, you know, we never had the opportunity to really kind of do something like that before, and to see how everybody responded to it. And I was like, people will drink this? Just like the, I'll just get a flight of it. So it was cool. I was very glad that it worked out.
Sounds like it's gone over pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, this beer isn't in production anymore. Kyle was actually the reason why we have so many cans. Kyle had just put away four packs and hit them very well and made sure that they were going to like be available for the trip.
Yeah, like a true alcoholic, just hiding beer all over the place. Yeah.
Well, we have a secret stash of bourbon in the lab, and it's basically Kyle's bourbon that he brought by one time.
What?
You used to have like a bottle of like
Yamazaki
12 like, in the office. We just got alcohol hidden all over the place, so it's just
yeah, you have to, man. It's just it's one of the things. I like this beer. It is very smooth. What's the fermentation temp? What are you logging this at?
This one was fermented at 52, and then basically we brought up to 55 towards the end of fermentation to just kind of do a diastole rest. Then from there, we slow dropped it to 50, trubed and harvested yeast, and then dry hopped, and then from there let it rise to 60. I don't think it got up to 60. It probably got up around 55, 56 max. And then from there, it's just a slow, like 3 degrees per day until we hit 31 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, no. And then this one, one thing that's a little different is this did receive Biofine.
Okay. All right. It's a trip, man, because you drink a brown beer like this, and it's malty, and it's, you know, there's the flavors and the caramel flavors, and you got a little of that pale chocolate in there, but you don't expect it to finish that sort of roundness at the end. You know, you want that, I expect that sort of carbonic bite or that lingering sweetness to sort of blend in together, and it's a different sort of come down, I guess. We're just doing drug references, I guess, all show. It's a different ride, man. And it's good. It's a pretty unique beer. I really like it. And it sounds like people were digging on it, which, again, does sort of strike me as odd. I would never imagine, people in Hawaii to be drinking, you know, colored beer, right? Your browns and your reds and stuff like that. But you were saying in the last segment that that's sort of what people are into.
Well, it's been like...
People are explorative still.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think what's kind of happened is that, you know, obviously there's that like, you know, 2009 to 2013, everybody had Belgian beers, everybody had, you know, like big, crazy, bitter IPAs. Yeah. And now it's kind of gotten to where it's like, here's the standard of what you would see at a brew pub, and everybody's still trying their best to keep up with these styles, but then also introduce some of the new styles without letting those, you know, core, you know, what beers are like fall away. So like people are still producing those styles, but still like trying to throw a hazy, trying to throw something else out there. And, you know, I think even at our brewery, like I get upset when I look at the list and it's like, wow, we've got a blonde and like everything else is a hoppy beer. That's sad. And then, you know, just trying to make sure like we can have more styles represented. So hopefully once the new tanks come in, it'll allow us to do more and be able to have like
maintain
more stuff
diversity.
Because I really think that, you know, it's sad when you see that it's just like you only can get like a hazy or like
here's 10 IPAs, same. Here's one light beer, here's one dark beer, here's a sour.
Yeah, I think, and most brewers want to make like a lot of different beers because it constantly like tricks your mind into like you thought you knew what you were doing, but now you have to try and do it again. Mm-hmm. And you're looking for different things in every single style. And like that aspect of just constant change and constant growth is what drives, at least in my opinion, the brewers I've met to continue to create better beer. Like we do well when we're given challenges versus monotony.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Teresa?
Well, I mean, I know I've said it more than once. It's like there's plenty of room for almost everything, but you know, when you lean into these styles that not everybody does, there's going to be plenty of market for that because, you know, we make a red ale, nobody is making a red ale right now. So that red ale is going to sell out super fast because people are like, I want to have a red ale. You know, it's not every bar in town. It's not every bottle shop, but you know, this is why we do this. You know, I know you guys feel the same way. It's like, we don't do this to make beer that sells out super fast every time. You know, we make this beer because we care about this beer and we want to educate the consumer and we want to enjoy it ourselves. Like we made a Rausch beer and we have a smoked Helles on right now. And I was like, guys, we can do love it. I'm so happy that we were able to do that and get away with it. And it sells just fine. And I'm like, you know what, people, like, don't be afraid. If we can sell a smoked Helles, You can too.
I gotta order some more beer from you, Teresa.
I'll just send you some beer, dude.
Oh well, shit. Thanks, man. And this is for both of you guys, actually. Do you think that there's some aspect of being a brewer where you're like, okay, I need a beer that's not going to sell out instantly, that's going to last 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm going to do, I shouldn't call it colored beer, but it like I'm going to do a brown ale, you know what I mean? Or a red ale. You know what I mean? Like, this is my brain just doesn't work sometimes. So I have to like say the thing I shouldn't say in order to get to clear the cash. So I can then provide for, but it's like, do you know what I mean? Do you go like, oh, okay, well I need to, I don't want to, our production isn't going to allow us to keep refilling these taps week after week after week. I have to have this tap being occupied for 3 weeks. Does that make sense? And if so, is that a thing?
Yeah, that's totally a thing.
Okay, good.
I mean,
I'm cool.
We started doing a pale lager series, so it'd be, you know, the first one we did was just El Dorado. We did another one with Wakatoo. Then another one with like Citra El Dorado, and I think we might add another one somewhere in there. But
New Zealand Cascade.
Well, the next one we're doing is like New Zealand Cascade, but it's like, it's not something that somebody's going to be like, you know what I really want tonight? Like, it's going to be something where it's like, oh, that sounds cool, I'll have that. And like, it's not going to fly.
Through. I think like what he's referring through, to is more like 4 weeks. You know, your reds, your ESBs, your obscure styles that people don't necessarily gravitate towards.
I think the hard part is you have to make it blend with whatever list you're creating. Like if all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like you've got one of those styles and it's like, it's almost striking. It's like you have the kid that's like dressed up as a clown in the class photo and you're like, wait, who's this guy?
You've seen my class photo.
So you're kind of trying to figure out like, okay, how do we blend all this? So like one thing was, I was really nervous to do reds and ambers, but I was like obsessed with like dark, like Negro Modelo. So I did
God bless,
because like that fills the void and like trying to find those balance of all that and see if people respond so we can try to start doing those other styles that aren't as popular, but we have that market for it versus,
Well, that's one of the best lagers that we have that sell out every damn time.
It's such a good beer. When you guys are up in Sacramento, are you going to Urban Roots?
Yeah, we're gonna try to hit it up and
please do.
We're gonna drop off some beer to Peter Hoey, see what he thinks.
Yeah, Kyle already went up there and got to have the 10-degree and 12-degree.
I lunched there yesterday.
What do you like better, Kyle? 10 or 12?
Honestly, the 10.
The 10-degree. So for those of you who don't know, it's a Czech style pils. I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's great. His Mexican lager is great. All of his lagers are just very good.
Yeah,
they're
just
good.
Very good, and they're the Hef, the Floofster. If you like Hefs, like German Hefs, it's called the Floofster. Yeah, it's very, very good, man. It's like it has everything you want in a German style Hef. It's like not too over the top in either way, but like the flavors are balanced so well, but they're like dialed up to like 9. It's just good, good stuff.
My former head brewer just went to work there. She went to another brewery, and then she just went to work there. And I'm jealous.
I think she'd be a little proud too, for sure.
For sure. Like I'm proud of her.
Yeah.
We're all proud.
That's awesome. What should I open next?
Okay, Joe.
Pina.
Or do you want to open the pina and see what that's like?
Let's do it, man.
Let's do it.
While I dig through the island Bagarino. Tell me what the pina hoplada is.
Looks like that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
This
one's got a good story too.
It is.
If you like pina hoplada.
Yeah. So this was actually the first beer it's not, you know, the original one that we did, but this was the first beer we ever put in the cans like during COVID, and it was the first time we had made it. In that time, but it was on the list, but since before we opened. So Chrissy used to live with Jose Arona, who's now I think the regional sales manager for 21A.
Jose is a real homie.
And he,
all right,
when he was roommates with Chrissy, he had this idea to do like a coconut pale ale, and it wasn't even supposed to be hazy. And I was like, oh, you want to get like some pineapple in there too? And he was like, yeah. And we were contract brewing for Hop Dogma at the time, and his Citro was really pineapple for it. So I was like, I got some hops I can just pull a couple ounces off of and just like throw it into this like 10-gallon homebrew. So we did that, and here we make this beer. I put it on tap, and then me and Chrissy go away for a little bit. And Jose had already pulled off like a growler of it, like took it home, and I had gotten to have a little bit.
Yeah, we had had a pint. It was back in the day when like I was a sales rep for another brewery, and Josh worked at EJ Fair. And so on the weekends, we would go off and do all the beer festivals, you know, hang out and, you know, get back to home come Monday. And so we were gone all weekend, but we had had a pint before we left. We got back on Monday, and it was like, fuck, like, let's have one of those beers. Like, damn, that was good. And it was all gone because Josh's roommates had drank all of it.
No, he's not. I've been homebrewing like multiple times.
I put it in.
And I come back, the keg fucking blows. And I walk in, I'm like, yo, why is the keg blown? And they're like, dude, it was so good. And I'm just like, fuck you. I'm living in Antioch. And like, it was a great living situation. It was like $400 a month. It was a room with like two other stoner dudes and like one deliver pizza. And it was awesome.
Dude, that sounds nice. That's legit. And especially you can brew that much beer and then have people help you clean it out. Yeah. I mean, even now I'm at the point where it's like, this particular one, that sucks. But like, I have a hard time clearing 5 gallons of the same beer. Cause it's, you know, it's like, whatever. Hazy beer.
Yep.
I would definitely make fun of this beer on Instagram for sure.
Go for it.
Oded Coconut IPA.
Yeah. So it's 20% oats, and then the base is Pilsner, and then some acidulated. It's Citra and Eldorado in the Whirlpool, and then we dry hop this. This is actually dry hopped at 2 pounds per barrel. So it's...
That seems like a lot, doesn't it? Is that a lot?
Two pounds
per barrel?
Really.
No? Okay.
Honestly, like, especially after coming back out here. And so I say 2 pounds per barrel. Yeah. So...
So yeah, we'll fuck you up out here, dude, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and we used to dry hop at like, you know, 3 to 4 pounds per barrel, but on hazies especially, we would have to have like a lagering time because there's so much stuff in suspension, so you have to have everything just kind of fall out and soften up. So we started using cryo hop. So we do 66% T90, 33% cryo, and I've liked the results a lot better. I found better stability through that. It's
better yields
as well. So yeah, it's basically, you know, 2 pounds per barrel Citra Eldorado with cryo Citra in there. And then I think this was sort of for a 30 barrel batch, it was, is it 50 pounds of coconut or
75?
Wow.
Yeah. But then it was like half of it was toasted, half of it was untoasted. And then it just gets recirculated. We transfer this beer to a bright tank, recirculated on coconut, then carb it up.
Okay.
Wow.
So it's a pretty extensive process, I guess. So I would not want this to be a staple.
What? I'll just use coconut flavoring, you guys. Come on. Jeez.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Believe me, we were like, well, what do these taste like? And then I was just like, oh dear God.
No, they're not good, dude. They're not good at all. Wow, this beer is a trip to smell, man. I'm still like sort of digesting the aromas because it is pineapple essence. It almost smells like a Dole Whip or like it smells, you know, it's not like pineapple, like the acidity and the thing, but it is, it's like overripe pineapple, I guess. You know, you cut a pineapple and you leave it in the fridge for a week. And then it's like what I would consider more true pineapple. And that's just from the hops.
Yeah. So, well, damn. The yeast we use is the Barbarian strain that's from BSI. So it's a derivative of like the Conan East Coast strain. So like Giga Yeast, you know, was you doing the Vermont. I think some other people have others. But that yeast is really interesting. It definitely. Peachy pineapple. Like Mosaic, when we use neutral yeast, it throws a lot of green mango with our lot. When we use it with this strain, it throws a lot of cantaloupe. So it was really interesting kind of getting used to it, but
peachy pineapple cantaloupe.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's very yeast forward on this beer, but I think just because we transferred off of the fermenter into the bright tank prior to all this, we actually end up getting a lot of the yeast out of solution, so it's a lot more shelf stable. We've had to unit tank a lot of our hazies, and I think one thing I've noticed is there's definitely a stability like factor involved. Like it still holds up like and everything like that, but this trip has been really interesting trying to see like, well, what happens, like what are yeah. people who buy our beer that are going to the mainland back with it actually drinking when they get back. So this has been kind of an eye opener. So
yeah, because you can't keep it cold on the plane,
yeah,
or in your car. I mean, or probably barely in your hotel room. I mean, you know, you got that little mini fridge. Maybe you can have like five at a time in there, but you're going to drink those.
If your hotel has a mini fridge.
Or like just
the true. Ice chip, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, back in the day, you know, you're at NHC and you have like, you go to the ice maker and you fill your sink with ice and you can maybe cool down three beers that way, but those are gone. And then what? So yeah, that is a really good experience. So what are you seeing from that as the days progress? Because I imagine you're also bringing your own beer to drink. What are you seeing with that sort of?
Yeah, we've been
so used to drinking.
Yeah, I've been like, I don't want to drink my beer. I want to see where everybody else is at and what's going on, because it's been a year and a half of just like not knowing.
I mean, that's a good point. But aren't you curious about how it's holding up and like,
oh, we've been doing that.
Yeah, okay.
Let's relax at the end of the night with our beer. It's been like, yeah, hey, we sent these beers in the brewing network. We need to panel all this.
Okay, all right. It's more work than enjoyment. I got you. Okay. Well, in that frame, though, what are you finding about shelf stability and how things changing and or not?
But the hazies have actually held up better than the West Coast.
Yeah.
And
really?
Which is interesting.
I don't get it.
I think, yeah, they're definitely holding up better than the West Coast. The West Coast are getting a bit more of a sweeter, rounder finish than I've been used to. Like when they're actually from the source and when they're taken care of the whole time, like they usually are.
Bright.
Yeah, they're not as bright and they're not as crisp in a dry finish. Like they're getting a sweeter, malty finish at the end that I'm not used to with our beer. It's really odd. And that's why we're not tasting any West Coast today. So
feels like summer.
We can also-
You can do it, man. We can go through it if you want.
I told you I was going to do it because I'm curious. Yeah, I want
to
know.
This is the whole thing with like sending your beer to competition, huh? Because it's like, how well can that beer be kept? And like, what are all the conditions it's going to go through?
And I also
craft
just
beer is a delicate.
We haven't sent anything to competition yet.
You talk about stuff. About this beer? Yeah, you talk about stuff, Kyle.
Feels like summer.
Yeah, Kyle, tell me about this beer. Hey, Kyle. It
didn't hold up well.
Okay, well, beyond that,
if you ask a brewer to talk about his beer, he'll be the first person.
No,
to
I actually
talk shit about
I,
it.
I actually didn't think it was that bad. I just opened one up a couple hours ago, but it's not a
couple hours ago.
I love the patio upstairs and we just couldn't resist. It's like, fuck, you want to have beers on like a patio in San Francisco? Like,
gotta do it, dude. Yeah, for sure. Well, and that's mainly why I wanted to open it up and talk about it briefly, you know, with you guys, because I wonder if it is as bad as you think it is. It's always going to be worse because you made it. I mean, every show I've ever edited on this program is like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever done in my entire life. So,
Aaron,
I'll do it.
What do you think's wrong with it? Before I tell you, like, it's like you were saying, Chrissy, like there's like a sweetness, and you're not used to that. It's more of a crisper thing.
No, the main thing that I
this
find
one
is,
has more of a pronounced bitterness than.
Than more about that. But like, I think the main thing is, it's just like there. It tastes like old IPA, and I think it's because it went through heat reactions, which catalyzed
skunked a little.
Yeah, there's a catalyst for oxidative reactions of whatever might have been in that can. So then it kind of starts tasting like old IPA because it got cooked.
Yeah.
Versus like, I don't know. That's just what I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is a harsh. It's a little harsh.
Yeah.
And it sounds like from all of your other beers that it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, and I mean, it was honestly one of those things where like I started sweating at a friend's house because I was just like, I basically sent this in to kind of go on the internet to get judged right here by the guy who literally is like, I will not drink anything above like 5% alcohol. me. So, I mean, I don't know. Basically,
that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, it was something where like I was really disappointed because we literally had canned this Monday and flew out Tuesday. And to see just like how quickly something can degrade with like heat. Well, was something where it's like
multiple days
yeah, sitting in a suitcase
in San Luis Obispo and driving, like that's what
it's a bad time to be out here and like transporting beer unrefrigerated, and you know, we talked about on the show we talked about it before the show, so it's not like a blind side. I told you I wanted to talk about it a little bit, but just for this conversation. Because sometimes we forget that beer is very fragile, or it can be very fragile. Some beers can be fine, some beers can't, and I don't know what that is. You know, I guess it's one of those things where just a case by case basis. But it's obviously really important to transport your beers very carefully, and if you can't, you're sort of at the whim of the elements, and that's. I mean, that's got to be tough to sort of worry about as you send your cases out, you know, your babies out into the world.
Yeah. Well, and thankfully, at least our local distribution, it's, you know, we don't have to worry about that. I mean, we're not one of the distributor or anything like that, but definitely for something like this is important because a lot of our customer base does take beers back. And, you know, for something that it was like, wow, it was this fresh and this is how it's tasting just after having to go through a road trip and everything like that is like, you know, what do we like, what, where should we even start as far as like making sure that it'll hold something? Cause I mean, I've held on to like a bottle of Sierra Nevada Pale for 3 months and then it tastes like Sierra Nevada Pale.
Same dude.
Granted, it's in a fridge. Right. So it, well, there's a retardation as far as like those oxidative reactions, but like still
there's respect for that shelf space so, and how long it's been able to hold true to.
Kyle wants to move on. And I get it. I mean, Kyle's very uncomfortable, and I totally understand. I definitely get it.
I will say this though, for the sake of conversation, like actually digesting this issue, like there's two things that come to mind. One is that I had some front of house managers that didn't understand why we didn't fill outside growlers, and especially in Hawaii where it's still developing that kind of education for the consumer, it pissed off consumers because it's like, well, I already bought a growler. Why the fuck do I need to buy yours? Like, you know, why do I have to spend more money? And ours are double wall vacuum insulated, like, you know, hydro flasks basically.
Okay. Yeah.
So like I got those because one, we have a growler machine. So if you don't want to invest in that, you can get a can to go, no problem. But otherwise, being in Hawaii, if you want to enjoy this on the beach, shit's not going to hold up if it's in a can.
No.
Put it in a growler and it'll actually stay colder for longer. Like my intent was the quality first, but you know, it is driving it further home that it's like, no, yep, quality first. Don't worry about that.
There's no point to doing anything if it's not going to be good.
Exactly.
There's no point.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think sometimes you give people more credit than is due possibly because they don't have the palate to understand the difference between, you know, marginalized quality and perfect quality. Because it's not like it went completely bad. It's like it's a little bit less than it could have been. But what they're cherishing is like they had this really cool experience at your place and they wanted to take beer to go and they're enjoying that experience again, but it's not. They may not actually be able to distinguish.
Well, and that's why
wrong there.
Yeah, right. And that's why I wanted to taste this West Coast because I don't think that the average beer drinker would know that it's off. But I understand the fact that you guys would know that it's off and it wouldn't sit well. And I respect that and I 100% understand that. Just like from a creative standpoint, I get it. And that's why I think making and selling beer is a hard business to be in mentally because you have all of these environmental factors that like weigh in on shit, but you think about it before you open your brewery, like I'm just going to fucking make beer and sell it. And it's going to be fucking rad. And then you go, well, now it's hot. And I had to ship shit. And the whole West Coast is on fire. And then we have to take this over. And then now what that's going to do to my beer. And then I'm just going to be laying awake at night wondering about all these people going, what am I? I'm never buying this again. But nobody, I think nobody's thinking that.
Even when we went to Firestone, we got to stop at Firestone Walker and tour. And like we got to meet like Dustin, who's like the head brewer and everything.
Yeah,
and
Dustin's rad.
Like, I actually tried it at like Brendan's place in Slow. I was just like, oh, dear God, I gave this to people.
Oh, man.
But no, but like,
you're a little hard on yourself, though.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's been a it's a good learning experience.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be something that, like, going back, we can
back to the lab.
Yeah, no, honestly, even Kyle said, like, you know, hey, best beers I've ever done was when I went off to the mainland and then collabed and then come back and then have that fresh restart and see what everybody else is doing. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm really excited to see kind of like when we get back and be like, all right, we got to play around with everybody else. Let's go and like, let's fucking do this.
Yeah, right. For sure. All right, we're going to take another quick break. It's the last break. We're going to come back. We're going to drink a couple more beers, talk a little bit more beer and, you know, whatever else we can get into. You know what I mean? So hang on, everybody. It's the session. You're on with Hanakoa Brewing from Hawaii. And I love you.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
It's the session.
Yeah! Hey, thanks for hanging on, everybody. I sincerely really appreciate it. We are back on with Hanakoa Brewing from Hawaii. And I'm about to drink a hazy double IPA. This is definitely, these last two segments have not been my favorite, but this one is called Cage Off, and it's like Face Off, but it's not. It's Josh and Kyle's faces looking very intense, and I really appreciate it on the front of the can. So
a lot better than we really look.
Photoshop is awesome, man. I mean, it looks like you have the face smoothing filters on and a little bit of eye makeup potentially. I don't know.
I just like to say that male models help people.
Okay, tell me about Cage Off, please.
Kyle, you go for it.
Yeah, Kyle, let's hear your dulcet tones, man.
It originally started out as a collaboration between the previous brewery I was at and Josh. And it was Cage the Fury. So it was a Nicolas Cage as Joe Exotic in a cage with a tiger.
Wow. Okay. You guys went for it, man.
That was the original collaboration. And that was all Galaxy and
Mosaic. Yeah.
Okay.
And this one, we didn't want to go that route, but we wanted to do pretty much the same thing, same genre, and went with Sabro, Simcoe, Motuer, and Motueka.
Okay, and, that sounds good.
It kind of turned into a fruit salad Imperial Hazy IPA with our face on it.
Was it meant to be an Imperial?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a big market for Imperial beers? I know we've talked a little bit about brown ales and people are sort of explorative and stuff, but Imperials, I think are, I don't know if they're a tough, I don't know. Cause I don't really see them.
Hawaii has a lot of ABV hunters.
So okay. Okay. Yeah, okay.
They just want the high alcohol, whatever, get some drunk. They're there with their family. One, yeah. Two drinks. What can I get and get out?
They're feeling good.
We put 8% Doppelbock in pints and that beer blew. And I was like, oh, didn't expect that.
Yeah. God bless, man.
That ABV scan people are doing, they're like,
yeah.
Yeah. I do it too, but for the opposite reasons.
Yeah, me too.
What can I spend the most on, or what can I buy the most and still drive home? This is a wild beer. Teresa, I wish you had some of this beer so you can tell me what I'm supposed to be tasting.
It. She'll get it.
Yeah, I'm 2 days away.
Doesn't help me now, though.
It sounds really good. I you know, I still don't, like, gravitate towards hazy IPAs, but when I get a good one, it's like I get all jazzed up because, I mean, there's a fair number that I don't particularly enjoy.
They're hard for me, and so maybe I'll have you guys help, like, coach me through what I'm tasting because they're hard for me. to figure out because they're not flavors I'm used to tasting, and it's hard to get my vocabulary wrapped around beers like this when I don't have them enough.
Your move, Kyle.
That's yeah, Kyle. I told you, Kyle, we're going to get to you, and this is the you, so let's go, baby.
Yeah, you.
I mean, I'd say this one in specific pulled out a lot of lemon, lime, cantaloupe. It's a little more juicy for a hazy, I think. Usually when I gravitate towards hazies, I like a little bit more dry, kind of a West Coast hazy mix. And this is not it. It's very juicy, very hazy.
It's like the fruit gusher's gum where you don't expect the juice to be inside, but then it is. Yeah, it is very smooth. It's not like pillowy or I mean, it is pillowy or whatever, but you have that the firm bitterness to sort of back it up. It definitely is an Imperial IPA because I can feel the alcohol in the esophagus, the esophageal region, if you will, because I'm a doctor.
Esophageal?
Esophageal. That's the, you know, the general area, right? So
I'm gonna call them sours.
But it is
esophagus.
Yeah, it's definitely cantaloupe, melon, what's the honeydew?
Yeah.
I get a little of that more than necessarily a cantaloupe thing.
Little guava.
Mango.
At this point, we're just basically like pulling fruit off the trees.
Yeah.
I know. It's like a big bowl of fruity goodness.
It's a fruit salad.
It was, I will say this, like, Kyle was raving about this thing, like, when it was in tank and it was carved, and I was like, he's like, this is, like, the best hazy we've done. I was like, there's no way, man. And then, like, I was picking up one, and I pulled off a 10-ounce just to be like, well, let's see. That 10-ounce was gone in maybe 4 minutes. And that's when I realized, like, oh, my God, what did we make?
I mean, it's a 9% beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I mean, this is the thing about hazy imperial beers is that mouthfeel-wise and flavor-wise, you don't really, it can hide the alcohol well. But I feel it. I feel the warmth. But it's like sort of too late at that point. You've already had it.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is pretty dangerous, man.
Yeah, it's something I told all the bartenders and servers, like, hey, if somebody's ordering a third one, look at the time.
Yeah.
I really like to keep the bathrooms clean.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, you almost need like a two within 45-minute limit.
Yeah. Well, I tried doing that one time with a beer where I was like limit two per customer, and people lost their shit. They're like, really? What do you mean I can only get two? And I'm like, whoa. I was with Bronin, and people lost their shit. And I'm like, I'm just trying to be responsible here. And everybody's
I would be that guy.
You were that guy because you weren't for us yet. And you were pissed. And like with that beer specifically, the other one that we did a different rendition with Lilikoi. So it had even more fruit added to it. And people were pissed that they couldn't have more than one in 10-ounce pours. And
it was a 5-gallon keg, so I'm like, yeah, dude, it's a 5-gallon keg of this stuff. Like, it's 1 10-ounce per customer.
Yeah, but it's that weird line that you draw where, like, for me, I'm front of house side, I'm marketing, I'm sales, and so it's like, well, you don't want to piss off the customer that's stoked on it, like, you know, but you also don't want them to get in a car wreck as well. It's
I prefer they get pissed off and get home safe.
100%.
Yeah, get pissed off. Don't be get pissed. Like drunk, pissed drunk, right?
Well,
or something.
I don't know. Like,
work on that marketing. I'll give it to
you. Handle their alcohol.
That's a good sign for up on the wall there.
It's not bad, right?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say.
I'll give that to you guys.
That hasn't been coined yet. Like, you might want to look into it.
Yeah. You guys take it for free. Just if you sell any of it, I get 10%. That's the.
Royalty.
That's a really good deal. Okay, welcome wonderful. To the Shark Tank.
Yeah. I'm in. Yeah, that's got to be a challenge. And we've talked, I think, like a lot about challenges on this show. And I don't know why I'm like so sort of stuck on it. But I feel like, I don't know, maybe because it sounds like the Hawaiian beer market is different than the West Coast. You guys tell me.
About 10 years behind.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, that's why your darker beers are selling well. That's why your reds and your browns are selling.
Well, and I think the other aspect is that you've got a small market that is really hyperactive in the whole thing. And the rest of the general market is just being exposed to what they would normally see in the grocery store. I mean, like one of the better moving mainland beers that we have in Hawaii is Modern Times.
Yeah, really?
And, you know, it's like that's kind of what comes through and people like respond to that. But then other than that, there's some other ones, but it's not like, like you come out here and you look at how many beers are on the shelf that are just within like a 20 mile radius. And you're just like, oh, wow. Like, this is insane.
We're bringing back another suitcase.
Yeah.
Are you really? Yeah.
But, and I think that's the hard part too, is like, you know, it, Hawaii is a very young, in a young place when it comes to craft beer. Like it's really a great opportunity to be able to try to build that aspect of the culture and the community. And I think it's good because all of us are really starting to work together. Whereas before it might've been something where everybody was very competitive because it's like, hey, this might be a smaller pond than we expect. So it's nice to have that optimism of like, hey, we can grow this as long as we make ourselves accessible. We involve ourselves with people and we do what we can to try to make this as approachable as possible.
A lot of education, definitely.
Okay. But on the other side of that, your lagers are your big sellers. And to me, those, it's like a, like a, well, juxtaposition of the
normally
thing.
It's like the hazies.
That's
like
probably,
the
hazies, okay.
It was one weekend. And, no, it wasn't the employees. Okay. It was the one weekend when we came out of the mugs that it was like, that was our main seller. But normally it's like hazy IPA sells West Coast IPA 2-1. But even then, West Coast IPA is like coming up second. And then everything else kind of falls into like similar lines and everything like that.
Well, and there's two notes to that. Like, yes.
Cycle Plus is so new.
But yeah.
But there's two parts to that. Like, yes, we have lagers that are selling faster, but that's different compared to other breweries out there. We do have a weird hyper local market that is interested in craft. And then there's the broad spectrum of people that drink Heineken at the beach. But then we have all of the tourists coming in from who knows where. So you've got people coming in from, you know, the Midwest that are used to, you know,
even the Bay Area, tons of Bay Area,
lots of people from Bay Area, Alaska, yeah, all over the place, you know, Australia, lots of Japanese. So we get a weird diverse culture of tourism that I feel like a lot of other places don't get.
Yeah, I guess I forget that. As much as like Hawaii is a destination, it's an international and statewide, like,
very international.
It's really weird.
50,000 people arriving a day.
Yeah.
Is it really? Well,
That makes me physically ill.
Yeah, I know, especially with like everything that's going on right now.
You, if you ever come out, do not stay in Waikiki. It's going to feel like The Walking Dead.
That's great for you to stay if you need one.
Thanks, man.
Like, there's that, and also with tourism, everybody wants that like free tote bag or that like extra little, you know, buyback offer. And when we released our, you know, slow chill pills, the one that we drank like a few ago, that one, we released that special glass with it where it's like, it's in a mug. It's a different glass pour. There, nothing else is getting poured in that glass. So I think it was the novelty of it getting into a different style that of glass that people were going to partake in, and people were all about it. So it's weird.
Different. Like,
yeah,
it was. It was very different and unique. And I think that it's the same thing as out here. It's an ADD mentality. Everybody is looking for what's new, what's the next thing. And so if you're, I mean, even now, like we just ordered Cryopop from Yakima Chief. I'm looking at getting the freeze dried whole cone. If I even looked at getting Phantasm, which was like dried, like grape must, which we'll see how that is.
Okay.
After a couple beers, I wasn't too impressed.
I'll be honest, even if we don't get it, like I will say it's the first time I've ever had to fill out an application to purchase a product where I have Instagram and what I do, and I was
like, looking for your resume.
I was like,
bro,
oh my gosh, are you hype enough?
It's a very interesting product. So I was like, at the end of the day, whatever we can do to continuously be like, this is new, this is interesting, this is different, like we kind of have to do it, but it's difficult to be able to dial in your process for everything when that's what you're constantly doing. So it almost presents a new challenge of having to figure out best practices with new products. like one go. It's like, hey, here's a wave you never rode before. Just fucking figure it out and get on it.
Yeah, and then we're not going to have the wave come back again for you to figure out what you did wrong for like 6 months or whatever. Much. Yeah.
But I will say, like, with the way that things are going, I'm very hopeful that we get to like revisit beers that were like, hey, that did really well. We really like that. Let's improve upon that. You know,
we've been doing that.
We have a list. Yeah, of been,
yeah. We do like every beer that we do, we constantly look back like, oh, this is what we do different. This is this. And
so, you know what I failed to even bring up is, when did you guys open? How long have you been brewing
November
beer?
November 2019.
Hell yeah. So right at that sweet spot, baby. That's right. That's right.
The 4 months old when pandemic hit.
Yeah, like the last good Christmas sleep that you've had, probably.
I wouldn't even say it was.
Yeah. No. Okay. All right. How was?
The first year anniversary, the week of, I totally forgot to crash a fermenter, and it's like 8 o'clock at night, and I was like, "Yeah, I got a bio. Oh, I never crashed that," and I just fucking cried.
Oh my god!
Damn.
But then the next day, Kyle came to volunteer on the line, and I was like, he like noticed a couple things, and he had just left. He knew he was going to pursue a different project, and I was like, "Hey, would you want to work here?" And he was like, "Yeah, totally." And I was just like, "Thank fucking god!"
I mean, I was already there during the day. So.
Yeah. So
okay. Yeah. Why not? Why not pay you at the same time?
Yeah.
You know, get you free beer and pay you. How was opening a brewery in Hawaii? Because I've always heard it's like one of the things about brewing on the islands is that everything's expensive. Did that sort of play into that? Like, why are we going to do this? Or, I mean, Josh, you're from Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was born and raised in Hawaii, and actually, like, I'm actually Native Hawaiian, so like the school I went to, you had to be of Native Hawaiian ancestry to attend.
Can I say the secret?
Yeah, can say the secret.
Uh-oh, here we go. Here we go. Exposure time, Chrissy. Let's go.
Okay. All right. So Josh was actually on Lilo and Stitch as a kid in the children's choir.
No.
Really?
Well, if I'm drunk enough, he will sing Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride. And he told me before this.
What, like, wait,
you can't say that anymore after I'm a few beers deep. And I was like, well, it's on you. Like, if you want
so to- you were in the movie?
Yeah, so we sang Himele no Lilo and Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride, part of Kamehameha School's children's chorus. It was like 4 years.
Wow. So that's how you open your the brewery from the
that's how I got a car
funds.
That's how he got his first car.
Yeah. Wait, really? You got paid that well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was like 40 kids, and they signed us up for Screen Actors Guild, and like, all of a sudden, middle school.
He has an IMDb.
Yeah.
Hey,
I'm gonna look in a second.
There's a YouTube video of Baby Josh, and
oh, it's adorable. It looks exactly like had a beard.
That's wild, man. That is wild.
So he is Native Hawaiian, like.
Yeah, so it was
documented through Disney.
It's definitely interesting.
Well, they're the arbiters of everything cultural, so you can't. Yeah.
Well, anyway, so like as far as like opening a brewery, I think, you know, obviously city planning and all that aspect, and
I'd say everything's expensive.
It's really hard. Yeah. Yeah. You can go for it, or
you just don't want to sing roller coaster.
Definitely the hardest.
Definitely being terrible right now.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that was most difficult was trying to figure out like, well, what works and what doesn't work, because you really don't know. Like, you can ask, like, our business model is kind of different from what everybody else was doing, and I think, you know, if I could go back in time, I think one thing I would have started out with would have been cans. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would have been able to pull it off.
Well, before when we were opening, yes, it is extremely expensive. We took over a 10,000 square foot warehouse. 5,000 square feet of it is for the brewery, the production cold box. The other 5,000 is for the dine-in kitchen. We have a full restaurant and bar.
Plus, now we have a whole cocktail program.
We have a
too.
Huge cocktail program.
Really?
Curtis Del Marino.
All right. Now you're talking.
Bartender. He makes amazing cocktails. But we have a really cool program going, but it was a lot of build out, and actually, when I was talking to Reagan from local, she was like, well, how many people do you have on staff? And I was like, oh, about 60. And she's like, 16. I was like, no, 60. And she's like, holy, I've got like 14.
Wow.
Like, well, I mean, you've got way less overhead than we do, but like, we have to have that much staff in order for the kitchen to run, for everything else. So yeah, it's really expensive, but.
And then there's Josh and I.
We've got a couple people now, and then we've got the other person coming on too. So it's going to be a team of five. Like, it's a big space, and it was honestly,
and it's expensive to produce.
It was a monster. To create.
Now we went into it knowing that we were going to get, you know, what was going to last us a long time instead of trying to scrimp and save, because we had enough of an investor to be able to sustain us.
Okay, and we're good.
Really lucky for that.
Yeah.
So without that, yeah, we would be putting duct tape on everything.
a few things we could put a screw in. And...
Well, yeah.
Screws are cheap enough, but investing, that's a great point, is that, and one that you can't ever hammer home enough, is that you need more money than you'll ever think you need.
Yeah, I don't think.
And more time for construction.
More time for construction? Okay.
Like, the construction took 2 years.
No, can I just say this? We broke ground in December 2018. We were supposed to get married in June 2019. Oh, yeah. So
don't plan a wedding while building a brewery.
Yeah, definitely don't plan a wedding while building a brewery. Because we got married somewhere else and then had the reception at the brewery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the week of the wedding, it's Wednesday that we got water, Thursday that we got power, Friday that we got the bar top installed. And then Saturday night, people dancing on the bar top.
So, like, if there's one thing I know I'm going to be with him forever, because that would have broken us before it ever happened.
Like, and mind you, like, still laying down horizontal and everything like that.
They weren't
like,
even in the upstairs. Brewery.
They were there.
Yeah.
It was, like, all covered up and everything. So it was, I built the draft, like, literally. So Kyle Manigold, like, basically the best man, like, comes down and, like, I was like, hey, I got to set up this draft system today. Like, I started getting, he's like, let's fucking do it, man. Let's go. And so we just started bubbling and everything like that. Yeah. And he is the Rick to my Morty. And the rickiest Rick would have the Mortiest Morty.
That's right. were your wedding, your reception gifts just basically hammers? So everyone could just do work after the party? It's like, oh, you're going to leave? Do me a favor. Just frame this door, please, before you go.
So
I need you.
You might actually appreciate this. So during our ceremony, we want to do a beer blending ceremony, which originally entailed very fancy stuff.
Well, that didn't happen. Originally, it was supposed to be like two different kinds of sour. So that way we could blend it. We have plans of expanding into a barrel program and a sour facility. So I was like, well, that's perfect. We can start it before we were ever opened, have that kind of birthing ceremony of these blends and these lambics, essentially.
Still in the works.
That never happened.
But anyway, so then that day I was like, I turned to my friend, I'm like, what does the liquor store have? He's got, oh, they got Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I'm like, fucking done. Perfect. Let's do that. So we literally just blend Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. We do the ceremony, reception.
Same beer in the same glass.
Yeah.
The next morning, we come into the brewery, and in the center of the bar is cleaned off. Here's this lone can of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And all I can think was, did Ken Grossman fucking Santa Claus me today?
When we blended the same beer together, it was two bottles. So he bought a six pack of two bottles. There were no cans in sight. There was no reason.
No one at the brewery had any cans of Sierra Nevada. No one knows where it came from. We asked people, we looked around. No cans.
It was the spirit of Ken Byron. We sent Byron over there and he dropped off a can.
He's great, by the way.
Byron?
I am. But
classic.
Like, cool dude. Like,
love me some Byron.
Love
him. One of my favorite people.
Yeah, good dude. Friendly guy. Well, that sounds like a party.
The whole, like, paper towel trick. Have you seen that?
Yes. Yeah, we did like the whole like tasting thing.
My friend's house all the time. Like, I was like, that's genius. Thank you for talking about that. Like,
he's wild, dude. He's wild. All right, I cracked the Baltic Porter.
Okay.
There we go.
We're doing it.
Oh, what we're talking about beer.
It's called Thunder Horse.
Thunder Horse.
So if anybody's gotten a chance to play Assassin's Creed Valhalla, that's the inspiration for this beer.
I haven't. I played a few of those games, but I don't know why I didn't do that one.
Thanks, Josh. It'll get better. Just let it mellow out. Just drink the foam, bro.
Did you pour it like an asshole?
Yeah, no, he poured it like Hillary.
Okay, yep, yeah, you sure did. Well, I will say it's probably the plastic cup, but yeah, that was probably a little, you know. You don't have your fancy faucet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's best probably what it is.
Provide.
Yeah. All right. Tell me about this Baltic Porter. You said you've never done one before.
Yeah. So,
this is my first time drinking it.
No, it's not.
Really?
It? Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Damn.
Well, we canned it and packaged it Monday before we left. So,
I'll let you tell the story, Josh.
Okay. So, basically,
I'm not surprised.
I wanted to do a Baltic Porter based on Metalocalypse's song Thunder Horse.
I thought that was going to be where you were going with the name.
Cool.
Honestly. Yeah. I love that fucking show so much.
I love that band. But yeah, so the whole, and then also I was playing the video game and I was like, this is fucking great. We should do this. And I wanted to do something that we could potentially throw into barrels. Something that, you know, would also do well on its own. I had never done the style. I reached out to some friends and, you know, the first recipe I throw out there, everybody's just like, whoa, whoa, meow. That's way too simple.
And really?
I thought it was a great recipe.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's like Pilsner, Vienna, Munich, Special B, Crystal Medium. There's like Carafa 2, that's the Deshus. There's Midnight Wheat. I think there's like, yeah, there's a couple other things I think too. But it's a very extensive malt bill. So we have to do this in two batches on our system. So the mash filter is great, but you can only go up to a certain Play-Doh with it before you can do half batches. So for something like this, we had to, you know, do two batches. And the first batch, it was like, you know, 275 pounds of Munich. Well, the second batch was 27 and a half pounds of Munich.
Wow.
And it was basically like, I
Josh
asked,
can't write.
Yeah, my handwriting. I should have been a doctor. But it was funny because I walk up to Kyle and I'm like, why are there like four bags of Munich here? He's like, dude, you only needed a half bag. And I was like, no. And he's like, what? And then he's like, the starting gravity is like 14 Play-Doh. And I'm like, that's not going to work. So we
started dextrose in.
Yeah, we just started dumping dextrose in. Just be like, well, I guess let's just get it up. And
it was a happy accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy little trees.
I was on the phone with you when that happened because you were like, wait a second, hold on. I gotta go buy it. And then all of a sudden we get back. And like, so we don't have enough. Don't be mad at me. I don't know out. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what's happening? And then he explained it. And I was like, well, I mean, let's hope for the best and see what happens. Like,
yeah,
how beers get invented.
So what's your opinion? Because I haven't been trained in like what to expect from a Baltic. All I've heard is you want to give them everything and nothing at the same time.
Like kids.
Like what?
Like kids, like children. You want to give them everything, but then not, I don't know.
and then take it away and see how they react.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to give them every opportunity, but you want to make them work for it at the same time.
Yeah. I'm just glad that I haven't heard you have another laser incident.
Laser?
Yeah. Laser shits.
Me? Oh, yo, with my kid? Yeah, no, that was a one-time deal.
Oh.
Thank God. What do I think? It's a lot. There's a lot going on in here. So I definitely need to sit with it, which is why I wish... Teresa, if you drink some, we'll compare notes afterwards, even though it doesn't help the show at all right now.
I want to compare my Baltic Porter, because I haven't actually had that many myself. Like, I kind of think what I... like in a Baltic Porter, and it is a little dry on the finish and not like super like malty, but also like dry a little bit.
No, I feel that. And that's, what do you got to say, JP?
Tell me the fermentation.
So we went in at 55 for this one to get a little bit more ester profile, and considering how much higher the alcohol was.
Yeah.
I believe this is a 8 or 9 week beer.
Unreal, man.
Well, I, you know,
that one just sat in the tank.
The fact that you are taking the time and you're not stressed or rushed about it, that's what I meant by that comment, where it's like, good, because more people should react that way. More people should take time. Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's something this big too. It's kind of the first time we've ever taken the Andex yeast to that level of gravity.
Yeah.
And
what's the ABV on this?
This is 9%.
Oh, 9%.
It's higher up.
It's a big one.
I know Morgan Territory's Dark Reckoning is 8%, and that is, yeah, I get why that's award winning. I mean, you taste it and you're like, okay, this, yeah, beautiful. It makes sense. And
that's kind of what we were going for. That was our.
Well, I think
what we wanted to.
What I really wanted to do is have something that was robust, but then it finished off, you know, dry. Like, not like it dried, but it wafted away. Like, it was like, it wasn't there. And because at the end of the day, it's like, well, if I was pillaging, you know, I would be a bunch of stuff. I literally, this sounds terrible, but sometimes when I conceptualize these things, I'm like, well, if I was a Viking and I just like axed off somebody's head and then sat down at a rock table, like, what would I want to have?
Legit was playing a lot of Viking video games and stuff.
Well, and, I don't know. I'm a weird dude, man. Like, I'm a weird fucking dude. Like, we walk by the game store and I was just like, oh shit, let's go in the game store.
No,
you left your unicorn puzzles in my room.
Oh, no, it's called Unstable Unicorns. I bought a game for the trip.
Yeah, but, well, look, that's a write-off. The video game, if it's an inspiration, that's a write-off. It's a write-off, man. There you go. If you start
draw
streaming
inspiration from the things that you love, it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah.
I'm on board.
Well, but anyway, so like the whole point was trying to create something that would be high alcohol while still having a robust palate, and yet it would fall off and drink as though it was lower. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that was because I wanted it to be where people could enjoy that intense flavor composition, because at the lower end, if you want to do that, you really have to mash a lot higher, and you kind of run the risk of everything like finishing way too cloying or sweet or anything like that. Like some of the porters and stuff that we had when we were actually in Utah, where it's like 4%, you have to do that. Like you could drink it and it was like, oh, okay. But it was too chewy in my opinion. And it was like, oh, cause you have to hit that target. And so I wanted to do something that was like very intense, but incredibly enjoyable.
It's a different
if that makes sense. Like
it does make sense. It really does. I'm actually going to like pull up the
style guidelines.
Yeah. Because I'm not super familiar with it. I just had one a couple weeks ago on a show. I mean, give me the recipe if you can, just like, you know, obviously you probably don't know it down to the pound, but what's in this?
Well, as far as so you've got Pilsner, Vienna, and Munich. You've got a higher percentage of Munich than Pilsner than Vienna. It's a very low amount of Carafa 2 Special D husk. I think it's we actually had to change it up because the first round the color was too light, so we like kind of messed around there. So I think you're looking at like 5 to 7% of the roasted malts. So the Midnight Wheat, the Carafa 2. Then you've got a Crystal Medium from Simpsons, and then there's Special B from Digman's. There's like two other things in there, and I can't. My laptop's right there. Can you actually? Sorry,
we're gonna do this.
No, this is dope.
Brew log.
Yeah. I'm actually gonna.
While he's looking that up, I'd say like, you know, so have you guys ever had a photic from High Water Brewing, their Baltic Porter?
No.
Beautiful representation of the style. It's textbook. It's very clean, crisp, dry. You know, it has all of the characteristics of a lager on that note.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's got that like deep chocolate. Like it's almost like, are you going to have milk chocolate or are you going to have dark chocolate to a higher cacao nib like ratio? And as it warms up, there's going to be some more blueberry, other, you know, complications to it. But at the end of the day, it's still going to finish dry. This one, because it traveled, like it's definitely finishing a little more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, like I don't taste the alcohol as much as 9%.
I do.
Yeah.
But I'm a delicate flower.
Aww. No, like Dave Wonder from Warbeer came and tried it, and I was like, well, what do you think the alcohol is? And he's like, 9%. I'm like, you nailed it. All right. Okay. So there, because I've gotten like mixed reviews. Some people are like, well, it's 9%. And then others are like, that seems like pretty high. And so I think it's really interesting to kind of see too, because like, it's not like you're making beer for one palate. You're constantly like seeing what everybody else is going to hit. Yeah. So you're trying to get that like weird ass median sort of deal.
Yeah. Your Venn diagram of the thing. I think that overall it's a very good recipe. If you're asking me to pick nits, which it sounds like you are, I think that it's too high for the style. But for me, it's a little too hot. I think that it's almost like there's too much going on in the malt, but I don't know if that's true. So let's table that for a second. Yeah.
It's good to know.
I think if you just brought the ABV down a little bit, I think it'd
be much more palatable.
Yeah. And I think it would be a little bit more to the style, because it is almost like an imperial stout where it's a little, maybe even a little more roasty than it should be. So I think if you bring the ABV down a little bit, bring the roast down a little bit, and let those sort of mid palate, raisiny, chocolatey things push through. Mm-hmm. But I mean, bro, you're like 90% there, because you have all the aspects of a large stout, essentially, is what it is, right?
Ice cream without the toppings.
but not the, not the acrid part of the stout, but a porter. There you go, Baltic porter. You're on target.
Thanks, dude. No, yeah. I really appreciate that. Honestly, he and I both have never brewed the style, and we, tried reaching out to people to get information. Any advice and feedback really helps, because we're still growing in all of this. So it's thank you. Seriously. That's really solid, awesome feedback.
Well, I hope so, man. I'm happy to help. And I think of all the, I think what you're doing is good. And I don't know that many breweries would admit to doing that, where we brewed this beer for the first time. We want any and all feedback on it. We want to reach out to people actively to figure out how we can improve this beer. I think you have a good headspace for what you need to elevate your game. You know what I mean? To really truly brew the best beers that you guys can. You're open to information. You're open to honesty. And I think that's great. I really do. Yeah.
If I wanted to send you beer, would I send it to the Hop Grenade?
No, send it to my house. Because I live 30 minutes away from the fucking Hop Grenade. And
where are you living?
Oakley, California. Okay. Yeah, so over the 4, down the Mad Max Highway, as we call it out here.
If it makes you feel better, when I dropped off that bag, I sealed it and zipped it up. And then I was like, and then here's beer for you guys.
Oh, nice.
So they didn't tap into it. Because we get that issue all the time at our tap room, where it's like, they'll be like, some brewer dropped off beers. And our beer tenders will be like, oh, yeah, no, that I took it home.
Yeah. Some brewer dropped off beers. Yeah, they were really good. Here are my notes. Here's my BJCB score sheet. Yeah.
We installed a fridge into our lab, I think, last month.
Just for that.
You should, man. There's a few people in the chat room saying hi. Michael Cherma. You're saying it's good to see you guys. Jade asks, Josh, where did you learn to brew? I feel like she already knows that.
I learned how to brew at Hop Tech Home Brewing. I started brewing when I was 20 years old.
Yep, all right.
And the first homebrew that I ever had was there at Roberto's, I think, 50th birthday party. And it was their nephew is actually one of my good friends, and we were friends in college at UOP in Stockton. So
nice.
His parents came to pick us up, and it was the first time that adults handed me a bowl of weed. And was like, here's your greens, kids. Yeah, they're like, all right, kids, in the school parking lot, just like, here you go, kids, start going. And I was like, do we do this? And he's like, yeah, my parents do this all the time. I'm like,
Jesus Christ. I love it.
Go up there and like had homebrews and no, honestly, like tight. I, you know, they're it's a great homebrew shop, great people, incredibly yep. knowledgeable. Like the amount of people that have got their start by being homebrewers there and have gone on to go professional is like they might as well have like a memorial.
Right.
Because they well, are
for Sean Hammer. Sean Hammer at Epidemic Ales. He learned through Pop Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you live here, Kyle?
I mean, I'm in Sacramento, so our homebrew shop was the Brewmeister.
The Brewmeister, yeah, dude. Kevin?
Eric.
Eric.
Yeah, Eric. He owns Red Bus Brewing Company. Does commercial brewing now.
Zach from Slice was working at the homebrew shop there.
He was my homebrew guy. It was funny. I used to go and buy ingredients from him, and he'd be like, "Hey, I'm going to open a brewery," and I'm like, "I'm going to open a brewery too." It was awesome.
That's rad. Jonathan in the chat says, "Josh, I love you," with a kissy emoji. So there's that.
With a kissy emoji.
Which Jonathan?
Jonathan Gross. There you go. He said the Baltic Porter was tasty. He also says Kyle sounds so sultry.
So let's say this. Let's talk about John Gross for a second. So he's a homebrewer out of Hawaii.
Okay.
He makes the best fucking imperial stout, and he makes it out of a fucking plastic bucket.
What an asshole.
I don't know how to explain it, but this guy basically makes me question why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
People like that suck, dude, because it's like, you know, the most cobbled together bullshit, but it works incredibly well. And they have some magic, some thing, some water treatment or some thing that you would never think about. Yeah, for sure, man. That's cool. Good for him, because that's a hard beer style to do.
Yeah. Well, he's in the military, and I kept telling him when he was going to leave. I was like, "Hey, you're going to open a brewery, right?" He was like, "Well, I'm thinking about doing like a nano." And I was like, "You need to do like an alternating proprietorship and like just go.
Yeah. Just come here and do it." And then Ian Nakamura says, "Hanakoa sounds amazing," with 4 exclamation points.
One of our main regulars.
Yeah, you could tell. Yeah. You could tell him the dog was
Yeah,
you could.
4 exclamation points. So he's just trying to be cool. He knows you guys.
No, Ian's.
He knows you. Good. Yeah, I'm just
every
kidding.
Single time. I'll say this about Hawaii people. Every single time Hawaii people go to the mainland, it's like, "What do you want from Trader Joe's? I got you."
Wow, Trader Joe's. Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing, and
that's wild.
He's one of our beer mules and like brings back Trader Joe's snacks. Like
it's my future roommate.
Yeah.
Nice. I will say cauliflower gnocchi from Trader Joe's.
So good. So
cauliflower
good.
Gnocchi? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, also the apricot white Stilton.
Okay. I'll put that on the list.
You're welcome.
I was in a Danville Trader Joe's, and this lady like walked up to me and she's like, "Here, you're welcome. I'm putting this in your cart. You need it." And I was like, "Oh, okay."
Wow. How brazen.
So confident, like Danville ladies are. I was like, "Well,
yeah, man. God, they really are too. It's weird.
They are.
It's cougars."
That's right. Hanakoa, where can we find more information about your beers?
Instagram and our website and Facebook. We are currently only available in Hawaii and on Oahu. It's fairly limited distribution, but if you want to come check us out, come to the brewery.
Yeah, we sell out. We'd love to distribute further. We can't produce enough beer to.
I just want to do Hanakoa on tour, where it's like we go somewhere, do like a tap takeover, and it's like a band doing a show, and like maybe we do some collabs.
Well, and that's why we're doing collabs.
So. Maybe some hula.
You know? Right. So if we can,
we'd have to get really good.
Well, if we can shout out. So like this,
of course,
you know, week and a half, 2 weeks.
It's two
we're,
weeks.
Yeah. We're doing collabs with, so you'll see this come out, within the next month or two. We've got collabs with Liquid Gravity down in Slow. We've got a collab with Morgan Territory and Faction. We are going to be collabing with Local tomorrow and Slice. In Sacramento, Lincoln, technically.
Yeah.
Shout out to Revision. We're doing a collab with Revision coming up. And then Dan at Half Moon
at Bay. Hop Dogma.
In Half Moon Bay.
They are not the same people.
They are not the same people. Near and dear to our heart. Also, James and Dan are different people.
They're two-headed monsters.
They're not two-headed monsters. From James.
Anyways.
Dan plays bluegrass. James has stories.
But, yeah, so if you can't make it out to the islands, there's a ton of collapse coming your way in Northern California.
Nice.
And Central.
Well, we're hoping, like, we can kind of organize some, like, collab night stuff where, like, we send all the beers to one spot. Like, maybe we can fly back up for those things.
Please give us the excuse to come back.
Yeah. That would be cool. And I think that's a good way to do it. You know, you fly around, you tour around, you brew some beers, living that sort of, like, bohemian lifestyle.
If we have enough people at the tap room.
True. Yeah. Yes. You got to have enough coverage for sure.
Or hire Kyle. Yeah.
Kyle's like, this is your first and last trip, Kyle. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was like, well, it was Kyle. So just so you guys know, this whole trip was kind of because of Kyle, because Zach from Slice reached out to Kyle, was like, hey, man, I got August 11th open up. You cool with that? And I was like, yeah, let me check with Christy. I was like, hey, do you want to go to the Bay Area for your birthday? Because your birthday's on the 16th.
Yeah, for
and she's
my birthday.
Like, what's the catch?
The catch is you have to work for 2 weeks.
I'm going to give you a trip for your birthday. We're going to travel. And I was like, no, what are we doing actually?
Yeah.
I was like, well, there's collabs. I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
Christy did book the whole trip.
And I booked everything. Yeah, Christy organized everything.
As Kyle famously said, if it were just Kyle and I booking it, we'd be at Best Westerns in the hotel.
You can't do that. You can't do that. All right, guys. Well, I'll let you split. Thank you very much, Josh. I'm sorry that you didn't get to sing unless you want to sing us out. And that's entirely up to you.
It's just out.
Do you want it? There's no place I'd rather be than on the ocean out at sea, lingering in the ocean blue. And if I had one wish come true, I'd surf till the sun sets beyond the horizon. Abiki viki my lohi lohi, lave my kapapa henalu, flying by on the Hawaiian roller coaster ride.
I love it. I've literally I've never seen that movie in my entire life.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
But now you have to.
Oh, now I have to.
You're so into Disney, you've never seen that movie.
I'm into Disneyland.
Please contribute to his like retirement plan by watching it, please.
Oh, if I watch it, I'm gonna fucking pirate it. What are you kidding me?
Aww. You don't wait. I'm you're a Disney fan. You don't have Disney Plus.
No, we don't have. We had it for a couple months, and then we got rid of it. I'm more of a you're Disney. I'm a Disney Parks you're fan. I'm like a Disney Parks history fan, but like the like brand that. In and of itself is I don't know. Not I shouldn't say
it's
that.
Changed a lot.
I'm not as into it as I like the history of the parks and like how shit works there.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll watch it twice. Once for me and once for JP. How about that?
Yes. But do it from different IP addresses. So
I got three kids. We could probably watch it three times.
I will watch it. It's like one of the only Disney movies I've never seen. I have a ton of friends who love that movie so much. So I do have to watch it. But that was very good, I guess.
I'm really learning sarcasm on this trip.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think that was sarcastic.
Well, I mean, honestly,
sarcasm?
It was good enough for no warm up. How about that? You didn't warm up, you didn't stretch. If Bev was here, she would have said 10 out of 10.
Bev's
Bev's great.
Bev's just like
if you'd ever like a live performance, it can happen whenever you want.
You know, I might actually reach out to you because maybe we'll do that on my Disney show on Ears Up Podcast. Go to earsuppodcast.com. Anyway, yeah, thank you very much, you guys. I really appreciate it. Not only the beers, but the time and the hangout. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you guys again, for sure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Teresa, thank you very much for hanging out. I'm sorry we couldn't have a beer together. But it sounds like, you'll get some love, too. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity cares.